to hear all of the radio coverage, and I read some of the newspaper coverage about the meeting that was held on campus on Thursday, during which the faculty members who were not being retained, which three of the faculty members who were not being retained, were among those who spoke. And while I don't at all assume that there was any inaccuracy in the reporting, I think that there was considerable potential for inaccuracy in some of the statements that were being made. I'm sure that the perception of the various sets of circumstances as seen by some of the faculty members who are personally and emotionally involved in these matters would lead them to the conclusions that they have reached. I think it's appropriate for me to have you hear from the deans who were involved in reviewing these cases. And I think maybe since the case of Dr. Wayne Williams and the case of Dr. Ralph, or Mr. Ralph Brana, are two of those that were in one of the schools, the School of Science and Mathematics, I'd like to have Dr. Clyde Fisher make a statement. And I asked all of the deans not only to prepare a statement, but to have it written out with enough copies so that the people who are there would be able to get it in writing. There wouldn't be any error. So, Clyde Fisher, if you will do your statement, I'd appreciate it.
Would you like me to distribute it before I read it?
Yes, sir.
That's the place.
One more shot.
We need one more, sir.
There you go.
Okay. Day to prepare the statement, and so this was prepared just months ago.
Concern has been expressed publicly in the past several days regarding the personnel practices in several departments and schools of the college. Allegations have been made that the personnel practices are, quote, politically influenced, unquote. Two of the personnel mentioned in the press are currently faculty members in the School of Science and Mathematics. Dr. Wayne Williams in the Biological Science Department and Mr. Ralph Brana. College regulations require the evaluation and specific recommendation regarding each probationary staff member annually. Tenured faculty members in the staff members department are consulted, and the report of the consultation accompanies the department head's evaluation and recommendation. These regulations are implemented in the School of Science and Mathematics and the departments in the school. The Biological Sciences Department instituted a procedure whereby the results of the evaluation and consultation on the part of the tenured faculty members are provided in writing simultaneously to the probationary staff member involved, to the department head, and to the dean. Last October, the tenured faculty in the Biological Sciences Department recommended that an offer of reappointment for 1971-72 not be extended to Dr. Williams. A copy of that recommendation is provided to him, to his department head, and to me. Prior to the processing by the department head of his recommendations for all second, third, and fourth probationary year faculty members, Dr. Williams submitted a letter of resignation to me to be effected at the end of this college year or sooner. As a matter of practice, once a faculty member has actually submitted a letter of resignation, I acknowledge the receipt of the letter and accept the resignation. And this occurred in Dr. Williams' case on October 23, 1970. As a result of the processing by Dr. Williams of his resignation, I did not include a recommendation for reappointment or non-reappointment for Dr. Williams for 1971-72 when I forwarded such recommendations to the Vice President. No action was possible or required with regard to 71-72 for Dr. Williams as a result of his resignation. It appears obvious, therefore, that the decision that Dr. Williams will not be on the staff for 1971-72 was made by Dr. Williams, and certainly in no way could be attributed to, quote, administrative action, unquote, at any level. On October 30, 1969, I completed an evaluation and formulated a recommendation regarding Mr. Ralph Brana of the Physics Department. I had received a recommendation from his tenured colleagues and department head that he be granted tenure effective September 1970. I could not endorse that recommendation and provided just over a one-page written statement why I could not endorse the recommendation. Mr. Branna and his department head, Dr. Bowles, were invited to my office on November 14, 1969, in accordance with the request that I discuss the matter with them. On November 17, 1969, a copy of my October 30 statement was made for and sent to Mr. Branna and his department head. Instead of tenure in September 1970, I recommended a full notice year of employment during 1970-71, thereby assuring approximately 19 months' notice in the event my recommendation against tenure and recommendation for a final notice year were approved by the President. The Personnel Review Committee of the Academic Senate held several hearings on Mr. Branna's situation, and I appeared before that committee. Subsequently, on December 1, 1969, President Kennedy sent to Mr. Branna a notice of his employment during 1970-71 as a final notice year without tenure. The President's decision was appealed by Mr. Branna to a grievance committee in accord with the college's regulations that provide such an opportunity for appeal. The grievance committee, consisting of five tenured non-administrative personnel representing the then five schools of the college, held several hearings regarding the appeal. The grievance committee's recommendation supported the administrative decision not to grant tenure. The committee's recommendation was dated May 18, 1970. Copies of it were provided to Mr. Branna, his department head, and me, with the recommendation being directed to President Kennedy. On June 3, 1970, the President informed Mr. Branna of his receipt of the Grievance Committee's recommendation and confirmed the December 1, 1969 decision to appoint Mr. Branna to the 1970-71 college year and with the notice that his services would terminate at the end of the spring quarter 1971. I do not provide for the public the detailed results of my evaluation or, quote, reasons, unquote, for my recommendations. Such documents, however, were provided to Mr. Branna personally, to his department head, the President, Personnel Review Committee, and the Grievance Committee. I have no objection if Mr. Branna wishes to provide copies of his own personal materials, however. It should be noted that Mr. Branna's, quote, earthquake research and subsequent appearance at meetings concerning the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant site, unquote, all occurred subsequent to the recommendation regarding non-tenure.
We go to the next piece. I want to make comments about both of those situations. In December, Ian McCabe, the editor-in-chief of the Mustang Daily, interviewed me, and one of the last items that he asked me about pertained to some faculty members about retention, non-retention, etc. Specifically, he asked about some cases in biological sciences. I said to him then that two faculty members in biological sciences were individually interviewed by me with all facets of both cases discussed in depth. These both cases were faculty members that had resigned, one of them being Wayne Williams. In neither case did the faculty member request that his resignation be set aside. Therefore, no action by the President was in order, except to investigate specific recommendations made in the interviews about the operations of the departments. And I did do this. Furthermore, in Dr. Wayne Williams' case, he asked if I would write letters of recommendation for him, and I received only one request for such a recommendation. This was from University of New England, where he's applying, and I did in fact write a letter of recommendation on his behalf. And I said that while he was not eligible for consideration for tenure at that time and had in fact resigned, that had he been recommended, had he been eligible, had he been recommended for tenure, I would have, by his faculty, members in the biological sciences, I would have, in fact, awarded him tenure. I think it's important for us to make sure that we know, in the case of Dr. Wayne Williams, that he did, in fact, resign after he felt that he was not getting support from the faculty in the biological sciences department. And I don't know that he has intimated or said that there was any problem in relationship between himself and the administration. I have not heard him say so. In the case of Dr. Branna, I think it should be known also that I was concerned about the upgrading of the physics department, the necessity of improving the stature. We'd had an ECPD, that's Engineering Council for Professional Development team on the campus over a year ago. They eventually accredited us with 5 programs in engineering. In an exit interview, these visiting authorities from throughout the United States pointed out several areas of weakness in our total operations. One was in the physics department, and they pointed out that we needed to have more PhDs among the tenured members of the faculty. Tenured members of the faculty at the time that this decision was made about Mr. Brana were, I believe, 15 in number, only 13 of whom did not have a PhD in physics, only 2 with a PhD in physics. In this particular area, I felt it was absolutely necessary that a PhD be a part of the man's qualifications. It becomes very difficult. The tenured members of the faculty are very close to other members of the faculty, and so as a result of this, the tenured members of the faculty, remember now, 13 of them without the PhD in physics, did in fact recommend Mr. Brana be given tenure, even though he too did not have a PhD. And I personally felt that this was necessary. Not only did I say so, I went to the physics department, said it to all the physics department faculty, discussed it with them. I think that you should know that when it, and I think Dr. Fisher pointed this out, that when this matter then went before the grievance committee of the faculty, a group appointed not by me, but through the procedures established and approved by the Academic Senate, that committee did in fact uphold the administrative decision to take this action. Now, normally the president of the college on personnel matters does in fact usually agree with the majority decision of the faculty in a department. But even in the AUP statement on governance of state college, it says that the president shall, in certain circumstances, particularly where there is compelling reasons to upgrade a program, that he should in fact make these kinds of decisions, and I did. I would want you to know that in Mr. Brana's case, neither Dr. Fisher nor I feel that that this gentleman has used all of his opportunities that he should have used in order to improve himself professionally and to help the college in its desire to strengthen its program in physical sciences as taught in physics. So I've been asked on several occasions, why didn't you say all these things before? Why didn't you make all this very clear? Well, it's not my policy to discuss personnel matters publicly. I think that it's inappropriate, but when members of the faculty decide that they're going to have a public meeting and discuss these things and use certain information that I don't think is factual, I think that it's necessary for me on behalf of the institution to bring about what clarification we can. I can assure you that Dr. Fisher's statement about Mr. Brana's involvement in the community, he was acting in a very responsible manner. I have no objection to whatever he said. I was unaware at the time that I was making a decision based upon my desire to see the physics department upgraded that he had said anything that was derogatory about any operation in the county, whether it was the Diablo Canyon project or any other thing. But at any rate, I think that the next case that we had that was where the faculty member gave considerable information that was, I thought, incorrect was Dr. Riso, and I would like to have Dr. Erickson now make a statement on this.
I have a statement on the non-retention case of Dr. Fred Riso.
Excuse me, sir, do you have copies?
Yes, I'll give them to you after I read my statement. The Mustang Daily article on personnel practices contains some errors of fact in the portion which reports the remarks of Fred Rizzo. For example, the statement, quote, that after favorable evaluation from his department, he was denied reappointment, end of quote, is blatantly false. The department vote on retention was 11 against, 1 for, and 1 abstention. The file does contain a direct reference to Rizzo as a potentially controversial figure. It is made by his department head and goes on to say that it is good for a campus to have divergent points of view. Rizzo's statement on the American Legion newsletter is irrelevant with regard to the actual reasons which led to the decision for non-retention. Rizzo slams President Kennedy, even though most faculty members know that school deans keep the personnel files and are responsible for them. Since most press material, laudatory letters, records of publications and activities are routinely added to faculty files, the president can hardly be expected to evaluate all items from over 700 faculty. More important, the personnel file which contained the newsletter was not available to the tenured faculty who voted 11-1-1 for non-retention. The department head who voted for non-retention was not aware of its presence. The material, irrelevant to the decision, is worth no more than a red herring to those who wish to avoid the relevant facts. With regard to the sum of the remarks attributed to Rizzo, there is no reference to the actual reasons for non-retention. While many educators expect, even demand, excellence in each teaching position there is, to some, a hierarchy in the pedagogical establishment, Rizzo regards himself as a professor who should not be required to teach more than an absolute minimum of freshman courses. It was his refusal to teach an assigned freshman course this year which directly led to his non-reappointment. In contrast, following a variety of political activities during the previous year, he was in fact reappointed. In short, Rizzo was not willing to do the job that needed to be done. That is why, among his faculty peers who have considered the facts in his case, both in the department and in the Faculty Personnel Review Committee, the vote against his retention is 20-1 in the negative. That concludes my statement. I might say that the three faculty members who served on the Ravens Committee also voted unanimously against. So in all, 24 have considered the decision, and it's almost unanimous.
I think I asked Dr. Cummins also to concern himself about this, because in the case of Mr. Rizzo, he was in fact the dean of the school at the time. English was in the area for which Dr. Cummins had administrative responsibility. So perhaps at this point, Dr. Cummins, you might want to add something in connection with Mr. Rizzo.
Yes, thank you, President Kennedy. There have been several discussions recently involving comments made by or about Dr. Fred Rizzo and circumstances which have influenced the recommendations for his non-reappointment to the faculty for 1971-72. Although I am not now directly associated with Fred Rizzo, I was involved as Dean of the School of Applied Arts in his initial appointment, and as such, dealt with him in an official capacity from the date of his appointment to September 1, 1970. At that time, the new School of Human Development and Education was established. Two concerns have been given particular attention. One, Fred Rizzo's acceptance of a teaching position at Cal Poly and his understanding regarding his specific assignments. And two, the matter of certain materials which were included in his official personnel file. And I submit the following facts. There are 2 points within the area of the conditions of his employment. First, while on a faculty recruitment trip in February 1969, I interviewed Dr. Rizzo in Denver, Colorado. At that time, I explained to him very clearly the long-standing policy of having all faculty in the English department carry as a part of their regular load each quarter one or more courses in freshman composition. Later, a formal letter of offer was submitted to Dr. Rizzo, and he accepted, indicating that he was agreeable to teaching classes in Afro-American and other literature, and also to teaching freshman classes. Secondly, Dr. Rizzo began his teaching assignment in the English department in the fall quarter of 1969, and my records indicate that during that academic year, he taught 8 freshman courses. Also, during that academic year, he accepted an offer for a reappointment to the 1970-71 school year without any apparent dissatisfaction with his previous or forthcoming teaching assignments. It was not until the preparation of the winter quarter schedule, 1971, that I understand he expressed his dissatisfaction over being assigned to teach freshman courses, as were other faculty members. In the area of the personnel file, in that discussion, the first comment I would make is that in March of 1970, I received a copy of the March 1970 newsletter released by post number 66 of the American Legion. When I received the newsletter, I considered it an information item, and it was placed in Dr. Rizzo's file. Until this date, I have not discussed the American Legion newsletter with anyone. This includes Willard Peterson, with whom I was formerly associated in the School of Applied Arts, and he was and still is the head of the English department, or any faculty members. Furthermore, the letter was not forwarded for review by the tenured faculty of the Academic Senate's Personnel Committee. Hence, the decisions made by these groups could not have been influenced by that document. Thirdly, my reason for including the American Legion newsletter in Dr. Rizzo's file was that it was an information item. I certainly had no reason to be concerned with regard to his speaking out against the war. Like many others, I am also opposed to the war. Nor did I have any objection to his exercising his right of free speech. However, I recognized that he might become involved in discussions which would require information from me, possibly in Dr. Rizzo's defense, and I was anxious to have as reference any documents which might be referred to. No questions were ever asked of me, and hence the matter was dropped. This may suggest the degree of importance I placed on the newsletter.
Do you have any questions?
Yes, but I'm going to take a lot of questions.
Do you want to wait? They change the words. One comment I can make about one other person that was listed in the muster as not present.
Thank you, sir. That's fine.
But referred to as a quote faculty member, Dr. Richard Green. And my comment is that he was hired as a lecturer in psychology for the academic year September to June 1971. His letter of offer and his acceptance were both based on the written understanding of termination in June 1971. Tenured members of the psychology department did not make a recommendation that he be offered a subsequent lecture or other position. It's incorrect to say that Dr. Green was fired. His contract is completed in June 1971. That might lead us to some questions about, you know, I mean, we have some problems related to people. Hire a person as a lecturer for a one-year period and it's not our intention to re-employ him at the end of that period. He could be re-employed, but it's a definitely one-year contract. There's no obligation on the part of the college to do anything. We don't even have to notify him. You know, it's like if you were given any of you working here, who were given a contract by your employer that said you were to work for us for a certain period of time at so much money, and your employment would be up as of a certain date. But sometime prior to that date, you would not feel, I don't think, that it was legitimate to say that you weren't going to be, that you were being fired just because your contract was. Okay, now you had some questions.
Yeah, a major point on Dr. Rizzo's case was he stated in his acceptance letter, this is to incumbents, that he agreed to teach classes in Afro-American and other literatures with no more than one or two freshman classes a year, as stated by Mr. Peterson. Now, this is a quote from his acceptance letter. And he stated that he felt that he was complying with this acceptance letter as we received and some questions by the school in teaching the classes, and he felt that according to this acceptance letter, he was not obligated to teach the freshman class in question during winter quarter. Now, would you care to comment on this acceptance letter?
Well, I think that perhaps Dr. Erickson can better comment on that than I, because when this controversy or discussion arose, I was not the dean. He had, as I indicated in my report, Dr. Rizzo had taught the full year of 1969-70. He objected to teaching composition, and I'm not just sure what the dialogue was with his department head or with his dean at that time. So perhaps Dr. Erickson can point that out.
My response to your question is this. It relates to an April 8th letter, doesn't it?
April 69.
All right. Rizzo accepted his appointment in April 69, and instead of saying, as most faculty members do, I'm happy to come to teach American literature or whatever, he wrote into his letter that he expected not to teach more than one or two freshman courses. Dean Cummins handled that letter in the way that I think any dean would handle it. He responded to Dr. Rizzo with a letter stating that he should see his department head, in this case Willard Peterson, about his particular teaching assignment. To my knowledge, Rizzo did not take the opportunity to see Willard Peterson about his particular teaching assignment for his first year. Instead, he, I'm told, happily, at least uncomplainingly, accepted freshman courses. As a matter of fact, I think it's so that he accepted one more than the normal. I'm disappointed that Rizzo, after receiving a second acceptance letter in which he made no response as to say I'm limiting myself to certain courses I will teach, chose this fall to say I simply won't take my share of the freshman courses in the department. Apparently, he found, in fact, during his first year of teaching freshman courses, that he didn't like to teach them.
So the grounds on which he was not examined in subordination, not black teaching?
Yes.
Dr. Kennedy, will you attend any of the SNAP meetings in the next week or two and discuss this with SNAP?
Well, I think not. I think that as I look over the, what should I call it, the script that is being written for this little activity, that nothing would be served by having me attend a meeting that's sponsored by SNAP, which is made up of a number of students, some who are very conscientious, seeking answers about the world and world affairs, some of whom have declared themselves to be members of the New Left and are anxious to move in ways that would alienate certain parts of the campus community for whatever purposes would be achieved by that alienation. So I see that nothing would be served. I would not, in fact, be here today speaking about personnel matters if half a dozen faculty members had not accepted the SNAP invitation to come out and speak. When they did, certain of the statements that they made may be made from their particular viewpoint would be not meant to be inaccurate, but were in fact inaccurate. And so we're trying to clear the record here. I think the mass media is the best method by which I can make this clarification. I don't believe that going through a repetition of what happened in May, in March, is showing any learning by doing on my part.
Then you are, we can take it that you are satisfied with the faculty evaluation system and find no need for any review.
Oh, we shouldn't say that we find no need for review. I mean, on what
The way that the faculty is evaluated, you are...
Oh, no. This has nothing to do with the way in which the faculty is evaluated. I thought you were talking about these particular cases.
Well, this was one of the things that that SNAP said that they would like to see as an entire review of the way the faculty is evaluated.
Why should I go to a meeting sponsored by SNAP for the purpose of doing this when I have been for 2 or 3 years trying to get the student program on ASSIST off the ground? We had it going pretty well, and then basically student apathy or whatever took over, and the ASSIST program fell apart. The president of the student body, Paul Banky, and some other students working through the student association have made a proposal to the college's academic senate about a student evaluation system. The committee of the academic senate is reviewing this and already held at least one public hearing on it, and I think this afternoon, in fact, is holding another public hearing, if I'm not mistaken. Was it not scheduled for
tonight?
Being held on the proposal that has to do with student evaluation. Now, I think that you should know, however, that some of the liberal approach to student involvement that we already have had on this campus may, in fact, be declared at the next meeting of the Board of Trustees inoperative, and we may not even be able to do what we have already been doing. For example, we have on every one of these cases where you've heard of the use of the word Academic Senate Personnel Review Committee having been involved, on that review committee set up by the Academic Senate have been representatives not just of faculty but also of professional members of the non-academic staff and a student representative. And that student representative sitting in there has been aware of all of the activities in every one of these cases, has known about the review of this. And I should compliment, in every instance, this person has done a very good job, the student has done a very good job of not divulging the information that was presented, has not used the personnel files or any information outside of that committee. Now, at the last meeting of the Board of Trustees, the Faculty Affairs Committee did, in fact, adopt a 9-point program that was a compromise between what the Council of State College Presidents, the Academic Senate, and a trustee, president, chancellor, staff, rainbow committee had developed over a period of time on tenure, retention, etc., of faculty for an involved evaluation. And that particular new set of criteria does include something in it that I thought at the time that it was being heard was going to be interpreted more broadly, and with Paul Banky at the meeting just a week ago, I had assured him as the meeting started, "Don't worry, Paul, about item number one in the list of nine. We'll interpret it locally in the broadest terms, and you won't have to worry about it. Students will still be able to serve. We'll still be able to use student evaluation as we have in the past," and so on. One of the other state college presidents, taking another point of view, spoke at the meeting and said, "I want an interpretation now. In item number one, will that in fact mean that only tenured members of the faculty can be a part of the official recommending procedure to the president in all cases of reappointment, tenure, promotion, etc.?" And the answer was by legal staff and others, "Yes, that's it." And I said, "Well, now wait just a minute. I thought we could interpret this locally," and I was informed otherwise. The trustees did in fact accept it, and accepted it on the basis that the whole package would have to be written into Title V of the Administrative Code, and if there was to be any loosening up, maybe it could be done in that way. But as it stands now, the direction is to tighten it up, not to loosen it up. There'll be less student involvement, less non-tenured faculty involvement than there has been.
Dr. Kennedy, what comment would you have for the students who are planning a rally, whatever, end of the week, in the beginning of next week, on trying to see you physically? What would you say to those who are planning on that kind of activity?
Well, I'd be interested in knowing what's their objective. I would be interested in knowing why it is that they feel that some kind of a mass confrontation. I understand from some people who told me about what's being planned that this statement was made. How true it is, I don't know, but I think that the source was an accurate one. That the point was is that we're going to have some of our people all primed with some loaded antagonistic questions, and we're going to fire them at the president from various places in the audience, and when he attempts to answer them, we're going to shout him down. Now, if this organization feels that this is the proper tactic, the proper set of strategies in order to bring about understanding of some very difficult problems related to evaluation of faculty and the improvement of an instructional program at this institution, then I don't really believe that they want to play the game by any rules that I normally operated by. You know, I'm not used to being shouted down. Let's put it like this: if somebody wants to shout me down, then don't invite me to come. You know, if you want to invite me to come and want to ask me some questions and want to listen to the answers, that's another thing. But if the script for this particular little, should we call it drama, has already been written, and that everybody has a copy of the script except the guy who's supposedly going to be the principal actor, then I don't think I want to go and join on this particular stage. Maybe I'm wrong, you know, but at this particular point, that's the word I get, and it seemed to be a pretty accurate interpretation from some people who heard it said, and let me put it like this: a disenchanted student or two who came in fact said to me, you know, "We're concerned about this. We don't think you ought to subject yourself to this, even though this organization thinks we're all an intimate part of it. We think that you'd be making a mistake to go subject yourself to this, because they have no real interest in having you say anything. They just want to discredit the administration and bring about some kind of confrontation between faculty, administration, between students and administration."
May I say something off the record on that matter?
I don't know if you can say anything off the record.
All right, so it's not off the record. as a person in speech, speech is my background. This is a delicate personnel matter about a person I like. Fred Rizzo. I don't want to talk to a mob about it. I'll talk to Fred Rizzo about it. I'll talk to any students who come into my office about it, and some have. I've gone further than I want to go about Fred Rizzo. I don't like to tell people the vote's 24 to 1 against him. I've told Fred Rizzo I can write you a good letter of recommendation as a potential teacher. He's a bright guy. He's going to have to learn that he's going to have to teach freshman composition along with the rest of the teachers. But this isn't the kind of a thing you can talk to a mob about. And if they're screaming, you aren't going to get anywhere.
I'd like to clear up something specifically about Mr. Rizzo. The major argument at the Thursday meeting was that his non-retention was political, or political implications involved in this. Now, yes, I mean, I know it's difficult to say yes or no, but do you think that there were, in fact, any political implications?
The question is one on which every person involved's motives is, if you want to put them in question, then there's no absolute answer. When you come as close to proving things as you can in the human world, the answer is no, there were no political implications. If there were, the year 1969, 1970 is the year of Rizzo's greatest political activity. We got a letter of complaint from a citizen about him during that year. I forget what the complaint was about.
He specifically mentions in a letter that I have here that there were direct political implications involved in it. He says there's a letter written by his chairman who comments on his high academic credentials, but at the same time elaborates on his political attitude, which had nothing to do with his academic credentials. Because the other is a letter written by a tenured member on an evaluation sheet. Quote, I feel that much of Mr. Rizzo's unhappiness with Polly's his irritation over Cal Poly's basically conservative orientation. I feel that Mr. Rizzo's radical liberal orientation is wasting on an eventual collision course with Cal Poly's conservatism. In short, that I feel that both he and Cal Poly are best served by a parting company. He can be replaced. Now, he says this is a direct quote from one of his evaluation forms from a faculty member who voted no.
Let me make a comment about that. You see, one of the problems that we have now that has to do with the concept that I initiated here, with some reluctance from some of the people in the administration about open files, in which the personnel file folder for a faculty member would be made available to him at any time. He came in and wanted to see his personnel file, and he not only could see it, but the only part of it that he couldn't see was what was in the confidential folder that was there prior to the time that he was hired. That is, those confidential statements that come from the university recommending him and so on. And those would, if they were still in the folder, if they hadn't been sent back to the university and so on, they would be removed at the time he was given the folder. So he had a chance to see everything else in there. Now, in terms of professional ethics, it is inappropriate for a faculty member to dig into his file and look at it and then come out and write a letter and hand it to the press in which he quotes from what some faculty member has put in his file. Now, if he disagrees with this, if he doesn't think that this is a correct statement, the procedure is that he can write a statement and put it in the file and make a particular point about that other comment. Now, you see, one of the things that we're going to force ourselves into here, if we're not careful, is either going back to, and I should tell you that some of the institutions of higher education are moving in that direction rapidly, going back to non-open files, that is, making sure that the people being evaluated never get a chance to see their files, or if you don't do that, you will almost eliminate the validity of the evaluations, because eventually no faculty member will write a thing about another faculty member, no matter what, you see, because he will assume that if he does, he may be quoted sometimes out of context, or he may be quoted in such a way that it was as this might be.
Well, there are some major discrepancies then, because it says in this letter, this is not a letter to the press, this is a letter addressed to Western Regional Office of the American Association of University Professors. in which Rizzo is calling for a non-local AAUP team of investigators to examine administrative procedures at Cal Poly to determine whether censure action should be placed on the college. He's also requesting legal assistance and he's sending...
Well, that's interesting. I'm glad to learn it from you. He evidently saw fit to give it to the press, but not to give it to anyone else. Did he give any other people copies of it to your...
No. Ian, you asked a question. There's two answers which tend to substantiate a no response. One is, after that year of his greatest political activity, he was criticized for draft counseling in his office, et cetera, et cetera. He was, in fact, rehired by his department. As a matter of fact, his department wanted to promote him in the spring of that year. If I had been dean, I would have done the same thing the dean did then. That is not promote a first-year man to the associate rank. Be that as it may, this year, when he refused to teach his freshman courses, was the time the decision was made.
Well, getting back to this file, it says in this letter, when I asked to see my file, I was not allowed to do so until tenured members of the English department had an opportunity to revise and or retract statements he made regarding me and my non-retention.
I'd like to respond to that. The State of California, Board of Trustees, or whoever, has put out the rules for open files. All right. People who have written letters into that file during this interim period have an opportunity to withdraw materials. I think I gave the tenured members of the faculty 2 days to withdraw any materials they wanted to.
Out of not just Rizzo's file, out of any file?
Out of Rizzo's file.
Out of Rizzo's
because
file.
Of the short amount of time the Rizzo wanted to see his file. So I think I gave him 2 days. No one withdrew a thing. There's only one thing withdrawn from that file before it goes on so other people look at it, and that is a laudatory letter from students dated this fall in behalf of Rizzo. Rizzo chose to leave the American Legion thing there, which he could have taken out. Withdrew the laudatory letter.
It also says that a letter containing negative statements about me has been removed from the file, even though I was there at the time the decision was made not to rehire me. This letter was written by Dean Cummings. See, that's the thing. There's discrepancies between the so-called defendant and then
I'll show you my correspondence with Rizzo if you want to see it. Rizzo, none of the English people withdrew anything from the file. If they had, they would have known it. I told Rizzo only one thing was withdrawn from the file. And there's no information in what was withdrawn that isn't there somewhere. In which he inferred it was Dean Cummings' letter.
Dr. Erickson?
Yes.
Maybe I misunderstood you. Did you not say that Dr. Rizzo withdrew the laudatory letter from the students?
Yes, it's a petition.
Does he have the, to the right, apparently he does have the right, I must not understand something, does he have the right to take things out of that file?
With my permission, yes.
I see. And I have a question for you, Dr. Kennedy. Is the open file policy a state policy, or is it an optional policy at the local level?
It's an optional policy at the local level. It may, in fact, be changed on a statewide level because there's great concern at the moment about the question of open files.
Then are you saying that Dr. Rizzo has committed an indiscretion, to say the least, by pulling information from his file and making it public?
Well, it seemed to me that if what he was doing was pulling information from his personnel file and giving it to the newspaper, that this would have been, in my opinion, an inappropriate use of the material that's in his personnel file. On the other hand, I can't I can't tell exactly what context it was that Ian was reading this, or whether he indicated who said it or not.
There's no indication that he said it.
If he didn't indicate who said it, then maybe he would be able to say, well, I didn't divulge which faculty member it was that said it.
With regard to the department head statement, which Ian has quoted a part of, it is a laudatory statement with regard to Rizzo. It's the one I made reference to here in my second paragraph, without quoting the statement. The statement goes on to say that he's a potentially controversial figure, but he doesn't get involved in issues without being pretty well grounded in the facts. And he didn't feel that he would take up an issue that he didn't know what he was talking about, and that it's good for a canvas.
Let me make one additional comment regarding the grievance procedure. We have a new statewide academic grievance procedure, which has a two-stage development in it in terms of this business of the initiation of a grievance. I don't know exactly what date it was that I received the letter from Dr. Rizzo saying that he was filing a grievance. When he did, I sent this on to Mr. Larry Voss, our Director of Personnel Relations, and said to him, initiate the necessary steps in the grievance procedure because Dr. Rizzo has asked for a grievance hearing, asked for the grievance procedure to start, the machinery to start. So the matter is then turned over to the Academic Senate's panel that's set up for this, and the man in charge, who is, I believe, Val Folsom, here, goes through the process. They have a list of all tenured faculty members, and they are listed by in a random order, and by a selection process, they select three. The three names are sent to the to my office and to the plaintiff, in this case, Dr. Rizzo. Each can make a challenge without reason, no reason necessary. I saw no reason to challenge the first three names listed. Dr. Rizzo did and challenged the first. It was sent back, and they had to then draw another number, and that gave three more names. The three names were again sent to me. These were this first two plus a new one sent back to me. And I saw no reason to challenge, and Dr. Rizzo challenged for the second time, and so for the second time there had to be a resorting to the random list and a substitution, and for the third time I received the list and saw no reason to challenge it. This time Dr. Rizzo saw no reason to challenge it either. So that list then contained the names of three people who he'd had an opportunity to challenge if he saw a need for doing so. And that group did on February the 11th get the case. On February the 23rd they submitted to me a report in which they said that they determined that no hearing was necessary. They'd investigated the matter. They had looked over all of the material. They had done everything that they were supposed to do, and that they and I notified then Dr. Rizzo on February the 24th as to this effect. The Faculty Grievance Committee appointed and reviewed their grievances, forwarded to me their notice of initial determination as required by Section 9 of the Grievance Procedures for Academic Personnel with California State Colleges, Executive Order Number 112. You are hereby advised that initial determination of the Grievance Committee is negative. Section 9.13 of the procedure provides that if the initial determination is negative, there should be no further proceedings under these procedures. A full copy of the Grievance Committee's notice of initial determination for this case is attached for your information. I gave him a copy of the committee's report. I think that that, in my opinion, all of our the steps involved and the procedures involved are have certainly been in order. I think that the faculty of the English department and their actions and the subsequent actions of the faculty and the grievance review upholding the situation and that we not reappoint lead me to believe that Dr. Rizzo has no case. Now, he has further if he wishes to pursue this matter further, he can go beyond the campus and I guess ask for the an off-campus hearing. There's a procedure for this. As far as I know, though, if the local faculty committee has denied this, I'm not too sure. We've never had a case like this. I'm not too sure what, in fact, would be his eligibility.
How would you feel about this AAUP investigation team coming in?
I'd be welcome to have them come in. I don't think there'll be a question.
I don't think they'll come, though.
Now, when they find out the faculty review committee has taken a look at this thing, and when they look at the procedures that they have already gone through, and they look at the vote of the faculty, I'd be mighty surprised if the AUP would... in the first place is the local AUP chapter would have to get behind this thing and put a lot of urging into it before...
The president of the AUP referred him to this office because he was one of the tenured English faculty members who refused retention, voted for retention. So he was referred to this regional office.
You mean he felt that he was prejudiced himself and therefore couldn't act?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is that normally a local AUP chapter would have to be the one that was making the proposal from get very far.
Another interesting thing is, I mean, do you think that any of this student reaction to these cases will have any bearing? I mean, do you think that anything can be done to change the situation?
Well, I don't know whether I'm talking to a reporter now or whether I'm talking to a student. Because I think the answer is that it all depends on what it is we're trying to change. It wasn't so many years ago when the president of this institution had a considerable amount of authority in these matters of personnel. And the most interesting thing to me is that in the days when he did, and I was not he that we're talking of, that there were many personnel matters settled almost unilaterally by the president, and there was I might say very little concern on the part of the students about it. The paradox of this now is that the president gets involved practically not at all, except in a kind of a very final, almost in some cases almost a red tape situation where I'm signing the letter that says where everything is already built up to this thing. And yet one of the things that gets kicked around in these conversations is it sounds as though the administration is unilaterally setting up here in this institution up here on the fourth floor and picking out guys, get rid of him and get rid of him and so on, it just isn't so, that's all. I'm telling you, it just isn't so. If somebody thinks that I put the finger on Rizzo or Brana or any of these guys and said, I don't want them around, that's just not a fact.
If it were a fact, most faculty would react negatively towards that and would recommend strongly for reappointment rather than the other way. Faculty, like all of us, do not like to be told by other people what we're going to recommend.